Mr. President, thank you very much for sitting down with RT again. Thursday will mark your sixth time addressing the United Nations General Assembly. During your tenure, the Security Council has passed four rounds of sanctions against your country over its nuclear program. And thus far, Iran has not stopped enriching uranium, which it says it's being used for only peaceful purposes. When you address the international community on Thursday, what will be different about your message? What is there left to say that hasn't been said?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of God, the compassionate and merciful, I'd like to say hello to you and your audience and all your colleagues.
Thank you.
My talks at the General Assembly address the events that shape our world today, or perhaps more importantly, the root causes of the challenges that we confront and the world confronts, given the conditions surrounding us. It is not that we're seeking to address problems that Iran may have, because we seek a larger goal, and that is to address the challenges of the world. For the problems that confront Iran are a small segment of larger impositions on the human community at large. So if the sources of the problem are identified, all nations and all people benefit. And I'll definitely speak of the changes that need to occur on the international scene.
In one of your recent interviews, I read that you said Iran is prepared to talk to the United States, but under fair conditions and respectful conditions. What are fair and respectful conditions?
Well, the minimal requirement of fair conditions is that both sides view each other as equals. If one side chooses to speak from a position of and use conditions available to it that are not ordinarily around, and chooses to replace logic with coercion, then we cannot have equal conditions. When some group thinks of mutual talks, it seems that what they have in mind is that the other party must accept their position. In other words, they have defined what they want the results of the talks to be, predefined, whereas these results have to come as the result of negotiations. And at times, some purely political purposes lie behind the talks. Whereas talks should try to shed light on the truth and to build mutual trust and mutual understanding. We have been told that the resolutions for sanctions have been passed to pressure Iran further, so that when the negotiations come, they would feel they have the upper hand. What is this supposed to really mean? This all renders the conditions of the negotiations unfair. Both sides must accept that they certainly do possess equal rights, without the need to coerce the other party, but rather sit down respectfully and talk. Under these conditions, we have always spoken of our readiness to talk. We are prepared now, too, under those conditions.
In August, the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff said during a national interview here in the States that a plan of attack against Iran is in place and that the option to act is ultimately up to the U.S. president, right now the current president, Barack Obama. I'm sure you heard those comments by Mike Mullen. How seriously did you consider those comments when you heard them being said?
In your opinion, how seriously should we be taking it anyway?
You turned a question around on me last time. I'm not a president. I wouldn't know.
I have to say that these are the polemics adopted by the United States, and it speaks of replacing logic with coercion, because there is no reason to want to attack Iran. What is the reason for it? The conditions aren't laid for it either. Do the conditions in the Middle East allow for another war? It does not have that capacity. I haven't said that, but it's also clear that the United States does not possess the capacity to enter another war either. So, in your opinion, should we really be taking it seriously? I haven't said that, but we are prepared for the unlikely scenario of war, and we are ready to defend ourselves. But at the same time, we believe that no special case of this type will happen.
You brought up the Middle East, and I'd like to ask you about the Middle East peace talks that have resumed. These are talks that have been on and off, on and off. Do you think that they're serious talks, or do you think they're just theatrics?
Your own question gives the response. When a journalist believes that it could all be theatrics, it speaks of the larger reality behind it. It's very meaningful. A lot of talks have happened so far on the Middle East, and various plans have been offered as well, but they have all failed. Why? When you plan to propose a new plan, you have to identify the reasons for the failure of the previous ones and ask sincerely what the causes of the failure were. I believe there are two causes that are clear. Why is negligence given towards the displacement of Palestinians? Over 5 million Palestinians are now displaced because their land is occupied by others and their rights are ignored while these negotiations are underway. The second cause is the negligence given to the right of national sovereignty by Palestinians. The Palestinians own a territory with its own history, its culture, its own life, and with a whole background that went with it. So, who are the negotiating parties at the table? Where is the Palestinian nation? Who represents them? And what do they discuss? Are they speaking about the right to national sovereignty of the Palestinians? The return of the refugees that were displaced? The end to the occupation and usurpation of the land? It seems to us that the plans put on the table so far, instead of addressing the root causes, seem to want to consolidate the Zionist regime's position, and that's precisely why they always fail. In the recent talks, we don't see any changes compared to the two of the past, and therefore we cannot accept success. What we would like to see is a Middle East filled with peace and security, but without addressing the root causes of insecurity, security will not prevail. And pointing fingers at others is useless. If I were to provide an example, it's as though an ailment related to the stomach would be treated like an ailment related to the ear. That's why I'm going to address the stomach problem.
I want to ask you about something I read in some reports that were quotes attributed to you. It said, Mr. President, that you said that any Israeli attack against Iran would be the destruction of the Jewish state. Do you really think Israel would ever attack your country?
No, even that entity aside, no other country can attack Iran. Who would want to attack Iran? Who can possibly attack Iran? The Zionist regime represents a very small entity. It doesn't even factor in our equations. It's far too weak to have an ability to attack Iran, because it understands perfectly that if it did, it would not lead to Iran's destruction.
But when you look at the entire globe, there has to be certain issues and conflicts you keep your eye on to protect your own country. I mean, you have a few wars around you. There has to be some type of concern.
There have been wars for a decade now. But look at those who started the wars. Where are they now? It's not that we're concerned about Iran's security. We're truly concerned about the current situation in the world altogether. The main problem besetting the world today is its management, the way it's run. Look at the world around us. There are about 2 billion people who live in hunger. Look at the global economy. There's almost complete insecurity in the global economy. Look at the political conditions in the world. Rather than consolidating friendships and points of convergence, the world is diverging. Terrorism, fundamentalism, and radicalism, as well as illicit trade and drug trafficking, are on the rise. People's lives are jeopardized on a daily basis. So, the way the world is currently run and mismanagement, it is unable to address these problems, and the prospects for the future are quite grim. So we believe that the main problem of the world is its current management. Unilateralism has brought the world to the brink of danger. It has increased the arms race and filled nuclear arsenals. And it allows for the furtherance of military contracts that increase the sale of airplanes, tanks, missiles. And what is all this for? Is this to serve peace? No, this alone can ignite a war. So I'd like to stress that the current problem of the world is its management, which we believe should be improved and reformed. And reformed it shall be. That's at least the agenda on our table.
To change the management of the world?
Yes.
And the current manager right now you're referring to is the United States? I'm asking that.
You just said it yourself.
And you are now working to change that?
Part of it is the U.S. The other is the culture that it brings about. And the third is the relationship among nations and countries. We're not the only ones who seek to alter it. Most governments and nations are unhappy with the current status quo, so everybody seeks change. If you look at the speeches given at the last General Assembly meeting, you'll realize that most managers and leaders around the world do want a fundamental change to the current status quo. Even with the Millennium event that's happening now, I was present at the opening and I realized that almost everyone is unhappy with the status quo. Everyone was speaking of the problems and the rising challenges around us. No one was offering a message of hope, so it is clear that everyone is unhappy.
I'm going to ask you one last question because I know we're running out of time. Iran recently released the American hiker, Sarah Short, and on humanitarian grounds, from what you said. And news has also come to light where you said that there are 8 Iranians that are languishing in U.S. jails. You would like to see their release. Can you tell me more about the situation and the circumstance of these 8 Iranians in U.S. jails?
These Iranians were arrested under false accusations. Some had traveled without visas to third countries, say to Georgia. U.S. forces arrested them in Georgia, for example, and then brought them to the U.S. and put them in prison, or perhaps in Thailand. This is kidnapping, and it's incompatible with law and international norms, because they've entered another country with official visas. So we believe that it's essential to respect international law. Otherwise, no one is safe. We believe that the U.S. has to review its position on this and allow those individuals to return home and pledge not to violate international regulations in the future.
Does the release of the 2 hikers, American hikers that are still in Iran, depend upon the release of the 8 Iranians that are in the U.S.?
No, not at all. Because the 2 in Iran have their cases under judicial review, and that has to go through its own process. I just want to announce that there are innocent Iranians in prisons, U.S. prisons. If U.S. authorities truly seek to promote human rights, here's their opportunity to prove that. I don't even have to go into the number of American people who are in prison. You know, this country has the largest number of prisoners per capita compared to its population, and the largest number of homeless people. The United States has the largest levels of discrimination in society, and there's much more to say on these fronts. So we think it's essential for American authorities to pay more attention to their own people's needs, too. There are 49 million impoverished people in America. That's equivalent to the population of 10 countries. Rather than just going to a third country to kidnap the citizens of another country and bring them and put them in their own prisons, it's much better to give attention to their own people.
Thank you, Mr. President.